T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
What's good, H-Town? I'm Clint Stoner. I'm joined by my man, Wade Smith. You're listening to Sports Radio 610, Houston's sports leader. And we are joined by the Hall of Famer, the General John McClain, who's brought to us always by Horn Solutions. John, what's going on, my man? John, you there, baby?
I'm here.
I got you, man. What's catch me up, man? You in Florida? What's going on out there?
I'm here, Clint and Wade, for the Hall of Fame vote, and we have 15 finalists in the morning. We'll spend about 9 hours in the hotel where the Hall of Fame is on South Beach, and we have 15 finalists. And then when we finish with the 15, we vote for 10, and they eliminate 5. Then we get 10. And we vote for 5 and eliminate 5 more. And that's where it really gets tough. And then when it comes down to the final 5, we vote yes or no. And I vote yes every time on that final 5 because I think it's incredibly unfair for somebody to get to that point and get voted down. So the one I feel the strongest about is Steelers safety Troy Polamalu. But they're all worthy. I'd love to see Alan Faneca from Rosenberg and LSU and Pittsburgh, but I don't see the Steelers having 2 of the 5, but it is very, very tough.
John, is that something that's always married to the Super Bowl? Could they not? Is that always? You always got to go to the on location?
Yeah, we've been that. This is my 25th year doing it full time. I did it 3 years for when Mickey Herskowitz from the Chronicle has been on that committee forever. He couldn't make the Super Bowl, so he had me sit in for him. So I think this is 28 or 29 years, and it's Saturday before the Super Bowl. Used to be we would meet, and the announcement would be made at the news conference right after that. Some of the finalists would be there. Some would be on the phone, and it would be announced. Then when they started putting everything in primetime on this NFL honors show, we on the committee find out, like everybody else does, when it's announced. So it is a very stressful time. It's an incredible honor. It's an enormous responsibility. And I take great pride in being on that committee. And this year we'll have 3 fewer finalists because usually there's 2 seniors and a contributor. And this year, because we already voted the special 100-year panel, we voted on the 2 seniors and 1 contributor. I'm sorry, 3 contributors and 10 seniors, along with 2 coaches. We only have former players in this group.
Hey, John, you talk about how stressful a situation is for this Hall of Fame vote, and I know you put a lot into it, a lot of preparation into your pitch on trying to get the guy that you're championing each and every year. The night before the actual vote, man, how do you usually sleep that night? Is that a tough night for you when you're trying to get ready to hear – when there's one of those guys that you're really trying to push to get into the hall?
Wade, that is a great question. The first guy that I really pushed for was former Oilers defensive end Elvin Mathay. He had been passed up for years, and I really like Elvin, and I was just something happened to me that never happens. I couldn't eat. And then Elvin made it, and I got a little confidence. The next time I did it was Mike Munchak. And Mike had gone 2 or 3 years without making it, and I felt a little more confident given my speech, my presentation to everybody. And he made it. And then Bruce Matthews was easy. Bruce was a lock. And Warren Moon, because Warren and the Oilers had never gotten beyond the divisional round of the playoffs, that was going to be tougher. So I did a lot of campaigning. Like I had like 8 career highlights, and I was hanging out the night before in the lobby because when voters would come back from dinner with their wives, I'd say, hey, here's something to read before you go to bed. And one of my strategies is always, if you put something in front of a media person, they're going to read it. And today, of course, we're like everybody else. We read it on our phones. But I would print out one sheet with these bold highlights, about five of them, and I'd go into the room, and I would watch other people put them on each seat. And when they were through, right before we were seated, I'd run over and put them on top. So everybody that had to read stuff found my guy on the top. And it worked pretty well. I was unable to get Bud Adams as a contributor in the centennial class, but I'll keep pushing for that. And but you're right. That night before, it's hard to sleep. It's hard to eat. When you're presenting somebody, like I'll sleep like a baby tonight because I'm not presenting anybody. I will speak up for some of the candidates, but it's I'm not the main presenter.
John, good luck with all that, man. You got a lot ahead of you, and I would, golly, I bet it's a madhouse in Miami. Of course, you're not there yet. You're in Palm Beach still, right?
Yeah, I came up to see a friend of mine, former member of the posse, Mark Waltz, who lives there, and we're hanging out doing something you've never done, Clint, drinking a little beer.
Come on.
And then tomorrow I'll drive down to Miami Beach, spend the day there. And another thing about the Hall of Fame committee, people always say the writers. We have broadcasters. We have Dan Fouts, James Lofton, two members of the Hall of Fame. I wish we had more members of the Hall of Fame on our committee. But when I hear players and fans and media complaining about the class, well, they're just writers. They don't know. And I want to say, you idiots, get a clue. Look at who's on the committee. It's not just us moron writers.
John, I know you're out there and got a lot going on with the Hall of Fame and the Super Bowl, but man, there's a couple of things going on back here in Houston. The Dusty Baker's introductory press conference was yesterday, of course, and I think leading up to the press conference, the word had gotten out that Dusty Baker was more than likely going to be the guy. I'm sure you put some thought into that, man. What is your reaction to officially Dusty Baker being the next Astros manager?
I was on the air with Mark and Landry when that story broke, and I immediately thought, man, I knew he was one of a group, and a guy like Buck Showalter, he'd been through the wars with the Yankees. You needed an experienced guy. And to me, Dusty Baker's like Andy Reid. Who doesn't like him? You know, you may not like some of his decisions. You may think, boy, in Andy's case, he has so many problems with the clock. In Dusty's case, couldn't win a World Series. But under the circumstances, I thought it was tremendous. And I think it, and I've read and listened to everything I could, to especially the people who had played for him and worked with him to see what they thought. And it's met with universal approval. And a lot of them are trying to make a big deal out of a one-year contract. Well, you know what? If he does a great job, they'll pick up that option year. And if not, they'll go somewhere else. But I really like the deal. I've been following his career since he was a player, especially when he played against the Dodgers and they beat the Astros. I hated him. But, man, I respect him. You don't find many people been in their sport as long as Dusty Baker's been in baseball.
John, you're down there at Super Bowl right now, of course, getting ready to vote on the Hall of Fame. What's the vibe like down there in the South Florida region? And what are teams or what are the fans kind of feeling when it comes to the game, the actual game, the 49ers and the Chiefs? How are things looking down there? Are people thinking that the 49ers are going to pull it out, Chiefs? How's things looking down there?
If you stay away from the fans of the two teams, most people are going with the Chiefs because of Mahomes. And I think a lot of people, like me, want to see Andy Reid get his first Super Bowl victory. I wrote a column about it last Sunday, and before I left, I wrote a column about it Sunday. It's already online at the Chronicle and will be in the paper about I picked the Chiefs to win 27-24. It's new school Andy Reid, 61, against old school Kyle Shanahan, 40. And I think it's going to come down to the quarterbacks. You know, quarterbacks have won 7 of the last 10 MVP awards, 29-53. And if you just break down the quarterbacks, it's going to be Mahomes over Garoppolo. But, man, what a story it'd be if Garoppolo, who hadn't thrown much more than the three of us have in the playoffs, if he had to play a game like he did in New Orleans, where he threw for more than 420 yards and 4 touchdowns. 3 times this year he had to throw for 300 yards, and they were 3-0. So I don't blame Jimmy Garoppolo for not throwing any, looking like the old Dolphins with with Bob Greasy. Kyle Shanahan, he's called 89 passes, 27 runs, and it's worked. But I think there's a good chance Garoppolo's going to have to throw the ball 25 or 30 times.
John, do you remember anything about – earlier we talked about – Wade and I talked about the age of Pat Mahomes and young quarterbacks having not fared real well in the Super Bowl. Obviously, Roethlisberger offset that. But Dan Marino, back in 1985, man, he had a hell of a season and then wasn't able to seal the deal at the very end. What do you remember about that year?
That was I did podcasts every day this week with memories, off the field memories of games, and that was one of the ones with off the field memories. But the game was, we thought, okay, Marino lost, so what? He'll be back five or six times. He never came back one more time. He had a great season. He went up against a great 49ers team and Joe Montana, and everybody thought we'd see Dan Marino in the Super Bowl again. Of course, he's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks in history, and that shows, as every coach, Kyle Shanahan, Andy Reid, they will tell their players, guys, as great as you are, you think you're going to come back again, you never know. When Shane Leckler was a rookie with the Raiders and they win, he goes, wow, this is great. I'm going to get to come back a bunch of times. And, of course, he never went back again. So that's one of the things, the urgencies, the importance. Some teams can handle that. Remember when the games used to be a blowout, like that game after the 84 season, but now they've all been closed. Defensive games like last year, offensive games like the year before, the overtime games. So I look for it to be really excited. And when people come down to Miami, especially South Beach, generally, they don't really care about the game. They care about – the women care about how little they can wear without getting arrested. And the guys see if they can keep from having wrecks while they're looking at those women.
Hey, John, you just sparked a thought right here, which is difficult to do with me most of the time. But isn't it crazy the way that you just mentioned Marino never getting back? And we talk about, like, the fan base around here with Bill O'Brien, and you talk about – right now, Andy Reid, late in his career, getting back for only the second time. Isn't it crazy how we talk about Dusty Baker having never won a World Series, and it's like we hold that against guys. And in reality, it is an absolute monster to get there once, more than once, or win one, you know, much less have multiple on your resume.
That's why it's so impressive when you see quarterbacks. Brady's the only four-time MVP. And Montana's the only three. And then there's several like Bradshaw, Starr, and Eli Manning who won it twice. You know, to win it once, to do like the Saints, get there one time, for some reason now it's almost like you got to win two for validation. The second one that Peyton Manning won, even though he didn't have much to do with it, you talk about a relief for Peyton. Roethlisberger, when he won his first, he was terrible. He had nothing to do with it. And then the second one over Arizona, he threw one of the greatest passes in NFL history to Santonio Holmes. And that's why, as I've said for years, I would like to be alive when Houston finally goes to the Super Bowl. And I've had so many people, including here, when I got here, goes, man, you guys could have hosted the AFC Championship game against the Titans and been favored. You could have been here. I said, I'm here. And it just makes people sick to think they came that close and blew it. I had a player one time give me a hard time. I'm not going to say who it is. He was giving me a hard time about something I wrote. He said, dude, I've been to two Super Bowls. I said, I've been to 35. He didn't say anything. He was trying to figure it out.
Drop the mic on that, man. Hey,
that's John McClain. He's brought to us every week on every single show by Horns Solutions. John, I know you're down in Florida, man. Be safe down there. It's a busy, busy place to be this weekend. Be safe. Safe travels. Thank you for coming on, my man.
Hey, Clint, Wade, thank you, guys. Have a great day. Have a great weekend, and have fun watching the Super Bowl. I think it's going to be a great one.
Yes, sir. That's right. That's John McClain, the general. My man, I like to call him Mad Dog. We'll get him to tell that story again. He's told it a few times on air. I absolutely love it. Joined by my man Wade Smith. I'm Clint Sterner. You're listening to Sports Radio 610, Houston's sports leader. Wade, the Houston Rockets, man, they're sitting at 29-18 right now. They got the Mavs tonight. Did you know that?
Of course I knew that.
They got the Mavs. They got the Mavs tonight, baby. Come on, little in-state matchup tonight. The Rockets, Wade. Look, three of the starters were out a couple games ago against Utah.
Yeah.
Eric Gordon goes out, and they get an upset win. Weren't supposed to win. They ended up winning convincingly, I believe. I watched that game all the way through. I believe there's one point late in the second quarter where Utah briefly took the lead. But for the most part, the Rockets had the lead. They stretched it out to 12-13 a few times and won that game convincingly without three starters. The three starters come back the next game versus Portland. And Portland's a good basketball team. Deep. You know, they got a couple guys hurt that they're talking about. If they come back, could this team be a real contender? I would say hell yeah, considering what I saw the other night. I don't watch Portland much, but based off what I saw the other night, I would imagine so. But nonetheless, the Rocket starters were back, and it was not a good look, man. It was a look of lack of energy, lack of effort, lack of sense of urgency. Again, there's dry spells shooting the rock from Harden, and obviously he's the ball dominant guy right now. Westbrook is playing smarter basketball, playing more efficient basketball. I've always loved, his energy and effort and the way he plays the game, his style. That was showcased big time in the loss. But nonetheless, the loss was disappointing. And I think, Wade, when I walked away from that game, other than being heated from Harden's performance and Capella just really struggling down low, it was one of those where I walked away from that game and I thought the Rockets, they've got to make a move if they're going to be contenders in the West at the end of the season.
Yeah, and we've been talking about it for a while now. There was times this season where the Rockets looked like they could compete with the big boys.
Yeah.
But then you saw that they really couldn't do it consistently, and you were seeing, all right, Clint Capella is a guy that maybe he's one of those pieces that you can move in order to improve the roster so they can compete with the LAs and the Denvers of the world in the West so that you can try to get to an NBA Finals. And that's when it kind of got our juices going and the balls turning, the wheels turning, trying to figure out a way to improve this roster. And so last night I was over at the gym and talking with some of the dads over there. You know, my daughters, both of them at volleyball practice, and talking with them, and they're talking about the Rockets. They said, man, what do you think about these Rockets, man? I'm like, man, the only way that the Rockets can improve is if they can figure out a way to trade Capella for some interior help that can actually get them buckets.
Yep.
And then another dad, he looked over and said, man, it don't have nothing to do with Capella. It's got to do with Harden. You got to figure out a way to move Harden, because as long as Harden's going to be here, the Rockets are not going to win a championship. And I was like, I'm thinking to myself, that's like the 638th time I've heard somebody say that specific thing, that you got to get rid of Harden. That's the only way to make it happen. And so we were talking, and I was like, man, if that's the case, if you get rid of Harden, if you were to trade Harden, you got to get a piece back that's young, that's a piece that can get you buckets, and then you have to get somebody down low to replace Capella. And I was like, you got to look around the NBA and say, like, what are the type of teams in the NBA that would want a Harden and that would be willing to give up some young talent? And I was messing around, and I was like, man, I started thinking. I'm like, the Phoenix Suns. The Phoenix Suns have Devin Booker, and they have DeAndre Ayton. And those two guys, if you could trade Harden and Capella for those two guys, I think that would be an excellent trade for the Houston Rockets. Of course, you have to add a guy like Tyler Johnson in there for the money purposes. But if you were to make that trade, and I want Rockets fans to chime in on this, 713-572-4610. You can either call in or text in. Like, if you had the opportunity to trade James Harden and Clint Capella for Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, and Tyler Johnson for the money purposes, would you make that trade today? And part of me is thinking to myself, well, would Phoenix make that trade?
Yeah.
Because right now Phoenix is 20-27. They're not going to be in the playoffs. They're not in the playoffs. They got to figure out a way to improve their roster. If you were to trade for James Harden, now you got a guy that's a former MVP. You got Capella, who's a good young piece. but you're giving away two of your cornerstone young players that are damn good players. You're trading them away. But I look at it from the Rockets' perspective. You bring in a guy like Devin Booker, a guy that is going to get you buckets, that the ball is not going to be stagnant. There's going to be a guy that can penetrate and finish, can hit open threes. You couple him with Westbrook, and then you have Ayton down low instead of Capella, guy that can offensively that can get you buckets. That's a beautiful combination for the Rockets. You still got Eric Gordon. I would love to make that trade, but I was thinking to myself, is this thing even a legitimate deal? Is this something that the Rockets would ever consider and that the Suns would be willing to go through?
Yeah, you know, that's the question is boy, that would be a ballsy move, right?
I mean,
when you trade an MVP caliber player, that would be a ballsy move. But I do agree with you that Capella's the one in this equation that, you know, I've been beating this drum, for a while now as far as, like, just the skill set on the offensive end of the floor outside of the pick and roll, outside of when he's attacking the basket without the ball and catching a lob or catching a rebound.
Yeah.
Right? It became very obvious, Wade, the other night. Like, and you'll like this comparison. I compared Harden, the way that the Rockets use Harden, the way Harden plays ball, to the way that the Texans use Hopkins as far as moving him and getting him set, letting the defense figure out what they want to do, and then snapping the ball, never putting any pressure on those guys. And I think about it, okay, if say that is what you're going to do. Well, when Harden does eat the double team and he is able to get the ball in the paint to Capella, Capella's immediately looking to kick it. He's not even looking to score.
Yeah.
And so it allows the defense to expand to those shooters. Now, they can't cover them all because you're doubling Harden, but you can pick and choose who you want to focus on, who you want to leave open, whoever's cold or whoever's the lesser of the shooter, then you leave that guy open. And it's just it's detrimental to what they're wanting to do. If you just had a guy down low that in a one-on-one situation had the arsenal to attack the rim in multiple ways, whether it's a mid-range jumper or it's a true low-post game, then you've at least got a hope. Your counterpunch, right, to the way that you play, you're shooting the ball from beyond the arc, your counterpunch is there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right now, there's no counterpunch. If the threes ain't dropping, no counterpunch at all. And that's a problem.
And you've seen teams win championships living and dying off of the three.
Yeah.
But they always had a guy that you could either put in the high post or you could put in the low post and get you buckets. And I'm talking going back to the 2011 Mavericks. They didn't have a low post guy, but they had a high post guy in Dirk Nowitzki that could get you buckets.
Yeah.
You need that type of thing in order for that three ball ability to score, the way of playing the game for it to pan out and you actually win a championship. And that's the thing with the Rockets right now. The Rockets are in a position that they've been really good for a really long period of time, but you're trying to figure out a way to get them over the hump. You've seen them.
It's similar to the Texans.
It's similar, but they've done a better job.
Yeah, they've gotten further. They've gotten further.
They've been closer.
They beat the Buffalo. They beat the Buffalo of the NBA last year in Utah and got to the same. But I mean, to me, it's just one of those ways where you just go, Mandy, are you convinced that you're trending upward and you're gonna be able to get over that hump? And I just don't see how you watch the Rockets right now and you feel that way. Rockets play tonight, Mavs versus Rockets. It's right here in Houston. Mavericks 29-18. Both teams 29-18 right now. Houston's an 8-point favorite. How about that? 6:30 p.m. That game tips off.
Yeah, they're an 8-point favorite because Luka is out.
Yeah,
with
Luka's
the ankle
out. How about this? Right, he sprained his ankle in practice.
Yeah, in practice. We're talking about practice.
My man's out there going hard,
talking
baby.
About practice.
Also tonight, Wade is again. We're on the a week out. I mean, about five, six days out of Kobe Bryant, the Kobe Bryant tragedy. The Lakers have yet to play a game since the passing of Kobe Bryant and the helicopter accident. Tonight, the Trailblazers, Lakers at the Staples Center. Obviously, the Lakers will honor Kobe pregame. I would imagine there'd be something halftime. I would imagine there's something postgame. If anybody deserves to be before, in the middle, and after, it's Kobe, man. This is a game this is must-watch TV, at least for the opening ceremony, at least for the event of honoring Kobe, no doubt.
Yeah, man, you got to get your tissues ready.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to cry. It's all right because it's a tragic deal, and so it's affected a lot of people. But I imagine they're going to put together a great tribute for Kobe, and it'll be must see TV.
Up next, man, I want to revisit Dusty Baker's introductory press conference from a little different angle. He had you laughing. He addressed the media in a unique way with a ton of swag. I want to do a little best of with Dusty Baker and see what you think about some of the things that he said yesterday. We'll do that next right here on Sports Radio 610. Joined by my man Wade Smith. Smitty, 12-year NFL vet. It's Super Bowl week. Houston Astros they've hired a manager, baby. Look, it's a beautiful day in H-Town. Wade, I wanted to have a little fun with Dusty Baker's introductory press conference, man. The best of. Look, we've already mentioned it earlier. He addressed all the issues, there's no doubt about it, concerns, not issues, the concerns that you may have with Dusty Baker between him and Jim Crane. They answered, all of the concerns, at least that needed to be addressed in a press conference situation. We'll see what happens moving forward. There's a lot of baseball to be played this year, obviously, as it unfolds. We'll see really what happens, but I think when you talk about the press conference, you've got to be content with what specifically you heard from both Jim Crane and Dusty Baker. But look, there's a little personality shown in there, man.
Of course.
There's a little personality shown in there. When you ask me, I'm excited about Dusty Baker for more reasons than the fact that he's been in the league for 22 years or been a manager for 22 years and the fact that he's been through some adversity as a head coach, and the fact that he retained as a manager, not a head coach, damn it, and that he's retained his staff, that all that stuff is important, and I'm glad to hear all that. But there were some things that as a man from South Texas,
yeah,
as a man that grew up when I grew up, I greatly appreciated that Dusty Baker said. I think you'll appreciate some of them. One soundbite you've heard, but I want to go ahead and hit it one more time. This is Dusty Baker addressing whether his age will be a problem in Houston as a manager.
I'm always about change. I'm a guy that how many men 70 years old have a 20-year-old son? And I just had my first grandchild 15 days ago. So, I enjoy and embrace, being modern, but also being old school at the same time. And I don't see why we can't combine the both of them.
Wade, 70 years old with a 20-year-old son.
Did you hear how he said it, too? He had some sauce and some swag in the way he said it. How many people 70 years old with a 20-year-old son? Like, I'm still putting it down. Yeah. Don't worry about me. I got this. That's what I heard. I don't know. Maybe I'm, how I heard it and everybody else heard it might be different. But that's how I heard it. It's like, hey, man, I do this, baby. Let's get it.
No, look, there's no doubt about it. I heard Landry Locker and Lopez talking earlier today about getting a T-shirt with Dusty Baker's head on it with a toothpick hanging out of your mouth, and it says last time. I'm in on that deal.
Now, listen, man, Dusty Baker, you talk about a guy that is a promotional tool that you can utilize, that hustle game, running game is going to have so many different – I'm sure they're going to utilize his image in some shape or form or fashion. Like, he got his own swag about him that where he is a promotional tool in himself. And so he's somebody that – the fans will get behind because he's just a likable guy. He's gonna have quotables like that at every press conference. And everybody knows that A.J. Hinch did an excellent job with communicating to fans and to the media and explaining ball and all that type of stuff. But he ain't have the swag like Dusty Baker has, man. And so that's something that you can kind of get behind. And that's something that's a positive that came out of a negative situation.
I got me a Colt 45 shirt last year, Wade. Rocked that thing with my 45s hat.
Yeah.
If they come out with a Dusty Baker head with the toothpick hanging out, I'm in. I can't tell you how many people have hit me up over the last 2 days of I got my toothpicks and my wristbands.
Yeah.
All because Dusty.
Yeah.
I don't know that I never realized the wristband deal until I started looking back at pictures. And he's got them up and down his arms.
I mean, he's all about look good, play good,
look good, feel good, play good, prime time,
all that. And right now he's just managing. So
yeah,
he's enjoying life, man. You can see that his personality shines with the way he just conducts himself day in and day out, man. And I think we're gonna enjoy him here in Houston.
Were you a too short guy?
I was, no question
about
it.
You couldn't grow up in our area and not be a too short guy, right?
I mean, too short is from the Bay. Life is too short.
Cuss words.
I mean, you can't say his favorite. You can't say, or maybe we can say it.
BJ Betty?
I think you actually can say that word, but I'm not going to say it because I'm not
trying. BJ Betty?
Nah, it's his word. What's my favorite word? You don't know? Oh, man, come on.
How do I not know the two? Life is, it's not on Life Is album, man.
It's not on that. I mean, that is his phrase. There's one thing that he always says.
Well, golly, you got me.
It's a female dog. You know, the way he says it, like.
Oh, yeah.
That's his thing.
Yes. I don't know that I knew that line, though. But, yeah, I know how you're saying he says it. I know I hear it in my mind right now.
That's the first thing when I think of too short. That's what I hear.
Nonetheless, clearly, I think our boy Dusty Baker may be a fan of too short.
The way I look at it, it's already written for me, or else it wouldn't have transpired and happened, you know, like this. My son, I keep talking about him, but he keeps me, you know, kind of hip. And so, you know, and so the other day, you know, he was listening to Too Short. And he said that this is, you may not know him, but. but, you know, and Too Short was singing that this is last album. And this is my last album.
That's beautiful. He's talking to Mark Berman, by the way. And he didn't, obviously, Mark's a, I mean, what do you think Mark is? Is he 60?
Yeah, he's definitely in the 60s.
I mean, 60-year-old white guy. He probably didn't know too much about Too Short. But clearly Dusty Baker. Here's a question about that. How many 20-year-old dudes you know listening to Too Short?
That's what I was going to go with that. I got to give a lot of credit to Dusty Baker's son for listening to Too Short.
Because he's an old soul, man.
He's an old soul. He's got to be. I mean, when your dad's 70, you're going to pick up some old soul type of habits. And so, to me, this speaks to his son. And I think it's the same son that almost got ran over back. You remember back in the World Series? I think his name starts with a D. I can't think of his name right now. But that little kid has grown up. He's playing baseball in college now. But if that kid is driving around and he's listening to Too Short, he's on his way.
Yeah.
Because he's listening to kind of the mecca and the pinnacle of hip hop music, and Too Short was one of those guys that you could just ride to.
Especially from the Bay Area, right? They're out in California. Yeah. So but I mean, look, you're talking about a guy that grew up in a clubhouse.
Yeah.
I mean, so I'm sure Too Short was banging pretty hard out, you know, as he was growing up in the clubhouse. Also, you know, one thing that Dusty Baker did, I did not know this about Dusty Baker, but one way to grow your popularity, be a little bit more accepting in South Texas, in the city of Houston, is to be able to speak a little Spanish. I mean, Dusty Baker spoke to the fan base in Spanish.
Hola, Mr. Baker.
Hola.
Rumor has it you speak Spanish.
Sí, seguro.
Do you feel comfortable enough to maybe give some words in Spanish to our Hispanic viewers on what it means to you to be here in Houston?
I don't know, man. That I'm pretty good, but it makes me tired. Okay, you know, so I'll talk to you. A los fanáticos aquí está en Houston. Yo tengo mucho amor y venga aquí a la parque y nosotros está muchos notramos. How you say, together, juntos.
Juntos.
Nosotros estamos mucho juntos. Y yo estoy cansado ahora. Gracias.
Look here, if you want to fast track your acceptance and your popularity in the city of Houston and surrounding areas, that's one way to get it popping.
No question about it. You could tell it wasn't his first rodeo,
man.
No. And so, yeah, that's important to ingratiate yourself with the community, with where you're going to be for, I guess, 8-9 months or whatever it's going to be is going to be down here. But that's a really good way to, like I said, ingratiate yourself with the fan base, because there's a lot of people here in Houston here that support the Astros that speaking Spanish is something that comes natural to them. And so he did a good job of it too, man. I could understand what he could say. I couldn't probably speak it as well as he spoke it.
Yes.
But, you know, being able to understand Spanish is a good quality to have, a good tool to have when you're navigating yourself day in and day out here in the great city of Houston.
Look here, Wade, I can guarantee you, I was the only white guy on my 12-year-old All-Star team in Pelly Park in Central League, Little League Park in Baytown, Texas. I can assure you that particular message from Dusty Baker spoke volumes to the Hispanic population in this area. I get it. Ain't no doubt about it. Now, I mean, look, all my partners that I grew up with, they're already Astro down. Tattoos, hat, whatever you got, flat bills, whatever you got, they got Astros. Look, they're Astros through and through. But it just got real with the Hispanic population when Dusty Baker did that right there. That was a really cool touch. You're listening to Sports Radio 610, Houston Sports Leader. I'm Clint Sterner. My man Smitty, Wade Smith, is joining me. Wade, one of the best things about Super Bowl week for me, man, is that the celebs and the current players that aren't in the game, they start coming out. They start jumping on set with some of these different shows, and you get some face-to-face. Did you see Baker Mayfield on, I believe it was Get Up this morning. Did you see Baker Mayfield?
I did not watch him because I wasn't looking forward to hearing what he had to say. I actually turned the channel because I'm not trying to hear Baker. But apparently, he might have said some things that I appreciated.
I thought it was interesting because he was on set with Dan Orlovsky, who's straight to the point. Ain't no sugarcoating. Marcus Spears, who I know personally, he's straight to the point, no sugarcoating. And Rex Ryan. And if you remember correctly, Rex Ryan was the one that basically.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't have it word for word in front of me, but he called out Baker and essentially didn't just call him out, but said, you got all this talent around you and you're not winning kind of deal. It was a call out. It was talked about at length in the media. I don't remember what. The good thing for Baker, it was the week before he went and beat Baltimore. So he got a little bit of get back immediately, but then they ended up winning six games. So Rex Ryan ultimately was pretty accurate with his opinion and his take. But Rex Ryan was on the set next to Baker Mayfield, and it was pretty interesting. And I tell you what, I like Baker Mayfield. I think Baker Mayfield is extremely talented. I can't appreciate at all the way that he handles. Has handled situations, the Duke Johnson deal, talking about Duke Johnson in the media. I'm not against a quarterback maybe feeling that way and voicing his opinion to his player, to his teammate, but doing it through the media is not the right way to do it.
Yeah.
I think there's some arrogant characteristics, some arrogance to Baker Mayfield that rubs a lot of people wrong, and to me, he should harness those a little bit better to keep it from rubbing people wrong. But when it's all said and done, this morning on Get Up, I got to salute the guy for the way that he addressed and responded to Marcus Spears when Spears hit him dead in the nose. He said, hey, man, what's the difference between college and the NFL? And he said it in a way of, what's the difference in why were you so successful in college and you struggled so far in the league?
It's a humbling experience. it's a different ballgame. Let's just be honest. I put my foot in my mouth a lot this past year, and I'm going to internalize that, and I think that's the way I need to handle it. I mean, rest in peace, Kobe, but that's the way he did it.
Yeah.
He motivated himself. He didn't talk a lot. He talked to his teammates, drove them to be better people, better men, and so that's the way I need to handle it. I don't need to respond to the things that don't matter, the things that don't help us win.
The whole time Rex Ryan sitting next to him, by the way, who he did respond to after Rex Ryan criticized him early in the season. But that's a Baker I can get behind.
That's a Baker that needs to be the person that leads a franchise. And that's the thing that he hadn't figured out. And I'm going to be me and I'm going to say what I'm going to say and have that mentality. All right, sounds good. But in real life, when you're talking about your teammates, when you're talking about people that have been there and done that before you, you got to humble yourself. And so to me, this sounds like, you know, maybe the Kobe thing humbled him a little bit. Maybe this is going to be a new and improved Baker Mayfield. Because if he had that mentality, you're right. remember, I used to be a big fan of Baker Mayfield. I was one of those guys that said, man, he's going to have a hell of a career.
Yeah.
I loved him coming out of college. I thought he had the swag that you need to where he can interact with and adapt to any situation. He can make it to where any teammate on the roster could relate with him. And that's something, that's a quality that you need to have when you're a franchise quarterback. But then, like I said, when he starts going at different teammates and going at guys that are in college while he's in the league and he's going at contemporaries and all this type of stuff, it's like, y'all just be quiet. Just play ball. And so I'm glad to hear him say something to that effect. Now he has to go out there and prove it with his play and by closing his mouth going forward.
Yeah, you know what? A lot of it with Baker Mayfield, Wade, to me is you could, I can see it being corrected because most of it is emotional issues. Like, he's at an emotional high after practice and trying to win and talking about the team, or he's an emotional after a game, or you know what I mean? It's one of those deals where if you can just harness and check your emotions, then I think he can right the ship. But he's got to do it sooner rather than later, because another, you know as well as anybody, in that locker room, you can have had all the success in college that you want to, but that locker room will expose you. If you become a problem in there, guys are going to realize it real quick, and they'll ship your ass up out of there if you ain't careful.
Yeah, he's going to have to do a good job of earning back some trust when it comes to his teammates, the locker room, and fans, because there's a lot of people, I'm sure, that support Baker Mayfield, but I'm sure there's also a lot of them that didn't appreciate the way he approached all of the commercials that he's in when he's not playing well and talking bad about other teammates and getting into it with coaches that don't even coach anymore. It's just like, you're doing too much. Like, focus on helping my team. If I'm a fan, focus on helping my team that's been in the dirt and in the ditch for years and years now. Yeah, like, let's focus on helping us win ball games and not worrying about all this other stuff. And so that's something that he's going to have to do going forward.
You know, that's funny you say that way, because I think it's different for players that may not be a quarterback or players that may not be trying to resurrect an organization like he's trying to do with Cleveland.
Yeah.
He's got a job that most guys don't have that job ahead of him. Like, you're the quarterback of a franchise that hadn't won in a long time. You got a lot of personalities you got to manage. Like, you need to really dial in on that. You know what I mean? Like, you need to go in there, close the door behind you, and don't come out.
Yeah, man, there's a different set of rules that you have to conduct yourself by if you're the franchise quarterback of an organization. There's things that you can and cannot do if you're the face of an organization. You can be a wide receiver or a running back or a linebacker and go to Scarlet's and have a good time, go to Scarlet University and have a good time.
Yes.
But if you're the face of an organization, you can't conduct yourself in that manner. There's just certain things you can and cannot do. And if you do those things, you'll be criticized. And that's something that takes away, it's a distraction from you helping the organization go forward. And so, and he made mistakes like that. And so he's got to figure out that, hey, I got to understand that I have to deal with a different set of rules and circumstances because I'm a franchise quarterback, and conduct himself accordingly.
Here's one that's a little bit more lighthearted. He had to face the 49ers defense earlier. He was asked about that.
Be remiss if we didn't ask you about the game on Sunday. You had a legendary battle against Patrick Mahomes in college. You played against this 49er defense this year. What is your expectation for that matchup, the great quarterback?
I don't know if you would call what I did playing against the defense. I was on the field at the same time. It's two of the best things in the league right now, the 49ers defense and the Chiefs offense going up against each other. I think it's going to be a great game. I think it's going to be something fun to watch.
Wait, that's what makes me a believer in Baker Mayfield is one, you can't disregard what he was able to do and being a walk-on and overcoming and becoming an All-American, becoming who he was in college and in the draft. But his ability to make fun of himself and not take life too serious in that instance gives me a little bit of hope that he'll right his ship and be the right and be right for Cleveland.
Yeah, man, he's winning back some cool points. He's winning back.
Yeah.
People understand it's humbling himself. If you can make fun of yourself and still function and go forward, that's an endearing quality to people when they're looking at you, either if they're supporting you or against you. So I think that was good by Baker, man. That's good to hear from him, because if he can keep that same mentality and attitude going forward, it's going to bode well for him.
5 o'clock fire. It's up next, baby. It's Super Bowl weekend. Got a lot going on. 99's on Saturday Night Live, hosting Saturday Night Live. We got a lot going on. We'll talk about it next. 5 o'clock fire right here on Sports Radio 610.
we really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.